Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And we're just fresh out of BlizzCon this weekend.
Yeah, BlizzCon was awesome. We did a Heroes of the Storm brawl.
It was called an exhibition match.
It was called a celebrity showdown
match. I don't know if it was a match.
It was more like a beating.
It was a savage punch. We got bear punched.
I mean, it was cool. I've never played any video games in front of... I mean, how many people were live? Probably 1,000?
Oh, yeah, thousands on the Twitch.
And on Twitch, I heard there was like 30 to 40,000 people watching.
Yeah, there's probably 1,000 people watching us in the stadium.
Yeah, I mean, just live in the... Like, on stage with literally 1,000 people like staring at you as you play. Like, I've never experienced that before.
We had headsets that were daisy-chained to each other so we could hear each other. We felt like pro gamers.
Yeah, except for the part where we actually play good.
Yeah, we fulfilled... We got like 80% of the way there.
It was cool because every time something would happen in the game, the whole crowd would cheer.
Right.
And like you couldn't hear anything through the headphones, and all of a sudden you just hear this roar of the crowd.
It was rumble.
Yeah. Unfortunately, most of the time they were cheering was because I was dying.
Anytime that I saw my character explode, I heard a cheer, and I was like, I guess that's kind of for me.
They're cheering at you?
Yeah. I already got a couple of pulls with Stitches, and we heard some like, woos. Yeah. So that was kind of cool.
It was fun. It was totally fun. We got to debut a couple of new characters.
Yeah, yeah.
A new map for the game.
Yeah. What I didn't like, though, is that I didn't get to pick up my Commander 2014 decks on Friday because we were at BlizzCon.
Yeah, I know. I still haven't picked mine up because we just got back, and right after we record this, going to get them.
Gotta get them.
Going to get them.
So we're going to continue our review of the decks. So far, we've done black and green, and today we are going to address white and red. Aggro colors. These are my colors right here.
These decks, well... I guess we're going to talk about it, but red looks particularly awesome.
Yeah, definitely. I think white is really strong, too.
Mm-hmm. And they both have a good identity.
Yeah, yeah. I think they did a really good job, like we said last week, of building around the color theme of the decks. So we'll get more into that. Is there anything else we should announce before we just jump in?
That's a no.
That's a no. Go out and try and get these commander decks if you can. Remember, mass retail outlets will also have them at MSRP. So
yeah, major retailers. Major retailers. Your best,
yeah. Anyway, so we're going to start with the white deck. So Josh, why don't you tell us what this deck's all about?
Okay, so I did the statistical breakdown similar to last episode. Again, it's not comprehensive. I did it quickly, so my numbers may be like one or two off. But they're close. Yeah, sorry. So the white deck, I listed everything in categories. So it has about three cards that are either Wrath or Mass Removal. It has about four cards that are single target removal. Has about five ramp cards that ramp your mana. Five or so card draw cards. Then there are 16 cards that make tokens.
Baboosh.
Yeah.
Wonder what
that's
this deck's
a
about.
Big, yeah, that's a... big alert that this deck is trying to do something.
Yeah.
There's one card that has equipment matters. Actually, there's two cards that are equipment matters, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 11 equipment in the deck. So that's that's a lot. And then there are, I wanted to list three creatures with double strike or that grant double strike because I think that also has to do with the equipment.
Yeah.
So there's really, you can sort of think of it as there are five creatures or things that say, oh, equipment matters.
Right.
To go along with that 11 different equipment. So, I mean, the 16 token generating cards sort of really stand out as like, hey, this is going to be a deck that wants to make a lot of tokens. And usually token decks are like going to make a ton of stuff and then attack you with a horde of little dudes.
Yeah.
And you can only block a few of them and it's they not overrun enough and you. They overrun you. Yeah.
Yeah. Similar to the green deck in that matter.
Yeah, exactly. This deck has less sort of mass, like pump all your guys stuff. And green's obviously better at that than white is in general, but white still has a lot of stuff throughout the history of Magic to pump its whole team, and so it's a little bit weird they don't have a lot of like, you know,
a sanctified charge kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean there's a couple, but there's not as many as I would expect.
Yeah,
I think the equipment sort of standing in for some of that, I guess.
Yeah, it feels slightly split because equipment can of course only attach to one creature, and you're trying to make a bunch of creatures with the deck. So I think it's partially because of the commander options they have in the deck, and also just because it does kind of dilute the deck, I think, a little bit.
Yeah.
But it also gives it a second out, because there are some big creatures that you can stack this onto and get in for some big damage.
True.
You know?
I think you're exactly right when you say it dilutes it. So moving forward, yeah, that's something I would look at. I think that in order for the deck to be really good, you have to sort of make a choice.
Yeah.
And it feels like tokens, you're just closer to, with, you know, right out of the box, yeah, this being a token deck than you are to this being an equipment deck.
Yeah, and I think equipment is easier to swap around to another deck.
You can swip it around too. Swip it at people.
Yeah, so if you buy another deck and you were like, well, I wish I had some sweet equipment in here, it's like, well, look at this white deck. It's got all these extra equipment that I can play because they're all artifacts.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so do we want to talk about the commanders that come?
Yeah, let's start off in alphabetical order with Jezahl Goldmane, 2/2 white for 4 total CMC, a legendary creature, cat warrior. A lot of cats, actually. I think white is a definitely a cat tribal deck.
Shout out to our friend Erica who loves cats.
Meow. And it's a 4/4 with first strike, and it has 3/2 white and activated ability. A catten creatures you control get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of attacking creatures.
A catten creatures, I
a
like
catten
that.
Creatures, yeah,
because they're cats. Get
kitties
it?
All over the place. That's not bad. It's an overrun on his actual character that costs one more than his casting cost. So you will definitely be able to do this the turn after you cast him, if you are playing on, you know, on ramp, I guess.
Yeah, you could even do it if you had a lot of mana the turn that you cast him, because he costs 4, and then for another 5, you can give all your stuff, like, pump it huge.
Yeah.
I think this is... We're going to talk about the rest. Well, let's read Nahiri next, actually, just because...
Yeah, definitely.
I think this is the choice between the two legendary creatures you want to go with to helm the deck.
Mm-hmm.
So Nahiri, the Lithomancer, she's a Planeswalker, 3/2 white for a 3 loyalty Planeswalker. She can be your commander. Her +2 is put a 1/1 white soldier creature token onto the battlefield, and you may attach any equipment you control to it.
Ooh.
So this is similar. I mean, Nahiri looks exactly like the Stoneforge Mystic. I think
they're in the same clan.
Just is the same person. Either way,
yeah,
it's similar, but you can't go... It's not as broken. You can't go search your deck for it.
Yeah.
So it's...
I mean, but this is still great, because there is some equipment that costs 6 to equip or whatever.
Yeah, true.
So.
Yeah, and you can break it, because, as we know, cheating mana costs
always
is a
important way
to break magic. And so it has to be on the battlefield under your control, but then you equip for free. Her -2 is you put an equipment card from your hand or your graveyard onto the battlefield.
That's solid.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So now you can -2 her to put something expensive on, and then the next turn +2 her
to equip it.
To equip it, yeah. So that's cheating mana cost twice.
Now, you are equipping it onto a 1/1 white core soldier token.
True.
You know, if there's some equipment that doesn't matter who it's equipped to, it just needs to be able to swing and deal combat damage, like the sword series, you know?
Yep, exactly. And then her -10, so you've got a +2 or a bunch of times, put a colorless equipment artifact token named Stoneforged Blade onto the battlefield. It has indestructible, and it says equipped creature gets +5/+5 and has double strike. And you can equip it for 0.
So it keeps with the equip theme that...
It creates a super equipment.
Yeah, super equipment.
Like, think if that was a card. Indestructible.
Oh, no, the equipment is indestructible.
Yeah.
But double strike +5/+5 is huge.
And it equips for 0.
Yeah.
Like, if that was a card, that would be, like, a crazy broken card.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, I don't know what the casting cost would be, but it gives double strike +5/+5, and it equips for 0?
Yeah, that's pretty intense. And you can pretty much never get rid of it.
Yeah.
But
for an ultimate that costs -10?
Yeah, if you count it out, she's going to go 3 to 5, 7, 9, 11. So it's going to take you 4 turns to get
her
there.
And then on the 5th turn, you have to alter.
Yeah.
So.
But you won't die from it if she hasn't been touched a single time, which
That's
is
true.
Definitely not going to happen. Someone's going to swipe at her, or, I don't know, lightning bolt at her. They could do any number of things to take that number down.
I mean, we've said this before. I don't think you can play any of the Planeswalkers. You can't play them because of their ultimate.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to look at it like, well, if I get that ultimate, it'll be awesome, but I have to sort of assume I'm not going to, and then say, well, is the card still good if I don't use the ultimate?
Mm-hmm.
And this card's still pretty good.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
The last option for for the commander is Kemba, Ka Regent, who is 1/2 white, so for 3 total, it's a 2/4 cat cleric. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a 2/2 white cat creature token onto the battlefield for each equipment attached to Kemba, Ka Regent.
So this is, like we said, the deck is a little bit disjointed. There's two ways to go. There's tokens and there's equipment, and right now it's sort of split down the middle, maybe a little bit leaning more towards token. But if you decided to make the deck into an equipment deck, Kemba would be your best choice as commander.
Definitely.
And Kemba does make tokens, so it's not completely outside. It's just,
She's definitely playable in the deck, especially if you get her and Nahiri out, and then you can just start swinging some equipment onto her.
And we're not going to advocate like totally changing the deck. Yeah. You know, like I think most people, they want to get the deck, they want to sort of make a few cosmetic changes, and then over time change it a lot. Mm-hmm. So at first, it's going to be really hard to just take out all the equipment, take out Kemba, totally go token. That just requires a massive makeover.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah. I think Jizal to me is the one that I would use.
Yeah, I agree. Just because, I mean, I think his ability to give you overrun in a deck that doesn't necessarily have it out of the box is really important too, because that's going to be a big win condition if you're able to put all those tokens on the battlefield. Outside of like, because if you're not doing commander damage, then the whole equip one guy and make him really big isn't as effective, because now you have to do 40 instead of 21.
That's a really good point too. If you have Nahiri, you can't do commander damage, right? Yeah. A planeswalker can't attack anybody, so they can't do commander damage.
Right. Someone like Kemba definitely can. Yeah. But you really have to build around her to make that effective.
Then I think you take out a lot of the token generation and you put in more equipment, mm-hmm. and
cards like Nahiri and Stoneforge Mystic.
Yeah, and then, you know, you're more of an equipment deck. But Stoneforge Mystic is a really expensive card, so we can't even talk about that one.
Well, we can talk about it. We just, you know, dreams.
So Jizal, yeah, I think is... Well, if you're playing a token deck, there's going to be two things you need. You're going to need a lot of tokens, and then you're going to need something to pump them. So you're going to want to pick something for your general, for your commander, that does at least one of those things. Mm-hmm. And since Nahiri makes 1/1 tokens, but that one a turn, I don't think she really counts as a big token generator.
No, definitely not.
So our best choice, I think, for one of those stages, pump or create tokens, is Jizal, because he's got a big pump spell.
Yeah, I'd love to play Jizal and then have Nahiri in the... I would love to draw Nahiri. Yeah. I think that's a lot more effective.
Yeah, totally agree. So moving forward, we're going to recommend Jizal as your front man for the deck. Although I'm sure a lot of people want to play Nahiri because it's sexy to use the planeswalkers as the commander, and I totally get it. And you know, it's not going to
try it out. I mean, maybe we're wrong. Who knows? True. Maybe there's some interactions here that... Oh right, we're never wrong. Only when we play Rewind. Heroes of the Storm.
Oh man, then we're never right.
Also, Jizal has the best surname of Goldmane. Also, my good friend Ajani.
Oh yeah,
there you go.
Oh, is it like Ajani's long lost brother? I don't know. Actually, doesn't have to be long lost.
They're both cats, though, so they do have that in common.
They look similar.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Okay. We've got the lieutenant cycle. Do you want to read that one?
Yes. So the lieutenant cycle, if you guys remember, is a new keyword that Wizards introduced in Commander 2014 that is based on whether or not you have your commander and you control your commander. So that means someone else hasn't stolen them. They're in play on your battlefield. Angelic Field Marshal is the white version of it. It's 2/2 white for a 3/3 with flying, and it says, Lieutenant, as long as you control your commander, Angelic Field Marshal gets +2/+2, and creatures you control have vigilance. So second part of that I really like. Creatures you control have vigilance. There are a lot of cards, though, that do that for, like, 2 white.
And do something else. Like
Brave the Sands, even, from cons.
Yeah. There's Intangible Virtue that gives all your creatures +1/+1 and vigilance.
Ooh.
All your tokens. But, you know, you're...
And that's not contingent on something like having a commander out in play.
When I first read this card, I thought it gave +2/+2 and vigilance to all your creatures. Ooh. Because the green one gives +2/+2 and trample to all your creatures.
Yeah.
And when I reread it and noticed, it itself gets +2/+2, but it doesn't grant it to your team.
Yep.
It only gives vigilance to your team. It's like, I mean, you just usually don't care if all your tokens have vigilance or not.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, because you've got a certain amount of tokens and everybody else has way less creatures.
Yeah.
And so
you don't need to swing, you know, if someone has 5 creatures and you have 20 tokens, you all swing with 15.
Yeah, exactly. So you can usually, if you have to, hold a couple back if you really need to defend. And most of the time you don't care about that and you're just swinging with all of them. And it doesn't matter if they're tapped or not. So,
yeah.
This card's okay. There's other decks that can go in. You know, that Derivi deck I was talking about a couple episodes ago with Stasis and stuff. This card's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Because you just don't want your guys to tap because it's hard to untap them.
Yeah.
So
it's an okay. I don't think it's the best one by far. I still like the green one a lot.
Yeah, of the ones we've talked about, I think green's the best one.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we have the offering cycle or the group hug cycle. And these are the cards that you can give yourself a benefit and one or two opponents benefit.
Correct.
This one's called Benevolent Offering. It's 3 and a white for an instant. I think the other two we talked about were Sorcerer's
Speed. Sorcerer's Speed, yeah.
Yeah, and this says, choose an opponent. You and that player each put 3/1/1 white spirit creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. So you and opponent each get a triplicate spirit, basically. And then choose an opponent. You gain 2 life for each creature you control, and that player gains 2 life for each creature he controls. Well, we don't really love life gain spells in general.
Right.
It's tacked on to another effect that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about if you cast this on an empty board and you had to choose the same person, you would both gain 6 life.
Mm-hmm. And both get 3 spirits.
And get 3 spirits, yeah. So that's
but better thing to do on an empty board is give somebody 3 spirits and then choose another person to gain life,
zero.
So they gain
yeah.
0 and you gain 6.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still like... It's okay. I mean, there's a token deck, so the way you want to play it is you do it and it gives you...
You know, 30 life or whatever, 40, 50,
yeah, exactly.
100.
You've already got 20 dudes out, yeah. And so you gain 100 life. We've talked about this in the very first episode. Life gain in Commander is way less powerful because of Commander damage.
Yeah.
So you can be at 1,000 life. You can be at an arbitrary amount of life,
yeah.
You know, 17 billion life, and they still hit you for 21 Commander damage and you're dead. So,
yeah, or they just go infinite.
Yeah, or they go infinite.
You know, there's so many different win conditions.
Yeah, so life gain, the life gain part really, I think it's like almost worthless.
Yeah, I like this as a weird battle trick. If someone's swinging at someone and it's like they could die, you know, you could be like, hey, look, I'm going to send you some blockers.
I didn't think about this. This is a good idea.
And you owe me next turn or whatever. Or
you just know, like,
or you just know, yeah.
They're going to crack back at the person who tried to kill him.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like you're actually making, like, somebody thinks they're going to finish somebody off, and all of a sudden they're in this really life and death struggle. And you're sitting there on the sidelines going, well, whoever wins that, I still win.
Yeah. I really like the idea of giving someone else tokens, because there's a lot of self-token generation. If someone has mana up, you're not going to just swing at them thinking that nothing could potentially happen. But if the other person's tapped out and they're like, ah, whatever, I'm going to die anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be like, no, I am benevolently
offering
you some spirits.
I wish it had the ability to create more stuff. Like, think of the green one. The green one has an X in its casting cost. And so if you draw it later in the game, you can just create 20 elves. This one, there's no big upside.
Yeah.
So if you draw it later, it's like, I don't know, it feels like 3/1/1 white flyers isn't going to do much for you.
Yeah, exactly.
If
we were playing a game of conspiracy, it would. I'd be so stoked about that.
So I'm kind of down on this card.
I agree.
I'm not a big fan of it. I would look to replace it at some point. It does make tokens, so early on you can keep it in because it's with your theme, but you know, there are way more powerful token creating cards than this card.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some of the best cards.
Yeah,
because when we say it makes tokens, we're just kind of making excuses for it. Because when cards like Nomad's Assembly exist,
that's a card that
makes tokens.
Yeah, exactly. It don't make no 3 tokens.
Yeah,
it scoffs at 3 tokens.
Yeah, it's a 4/2 white, 6 total for a sorcery. Put a 1/1 white core soldier creature token onto the battlefield for each creature you control. Dang. And then
because that wasn't good enough.
That wasn't good enough. Rebound. If you cast this spell from your hand, exile it as it resolves. At the beginning of your next upkeep, you may cast this card from exile without paying its mana cost. Whoa.
It doubles you twice.
It doubles you twice.
Yeah. So if you have, let's just say it's modest, you have 6 tokens out.
Right.
It makes 6. And then during your next upkeep, you now have 12. It makes 12. So you went from 6 to 24 over 2 turns. And that's a modest amount for this deck.
Yeah, that's insane, I think. I really like this. I think Rebound is so awesome in this case. It's asking to be countered, of course, because it's 6 mana. But
and you can get a little bit, like, you do it, and then somebody wraths, and then your upkeep comes, and you can cast it for free, but you have 0 creatures, so it's going to make 0.
Right.
So you can be gotten. You just have to pick your spot with it, but the effect can be literally game-winning.
Yeah, that's so huge. And then if you have Nuzzahl out, or Jazal, you have 24 people that can now swing for whatever. It's like, oh, gosh.
You just win at that point.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
This is one of those cards you play it, and then you're like, okay, nobody has an answer. I'm going to win.
Yeah.
So
hope you have an answer.
Yeah.
What it is.
The next one, feel like we've been talking about a lot, is Skull Clamp. It just goes so well in a token deck because it's just it reads 1 mana, draw 2 cards.
Yep.
And you don't care about losing a token or two.
The only thing you have to be careful of is giving your tokens anthem effects and making them without outside of the Skull Clamp reach.
Yeah, and we've talked about that also, which is like in general in token decks, you don't want to pump everything until you're going to win.
Yeah.
So usually you're like concentrating early game on just getting a lot of tokens, but not pumping them. And then when you're about to swing for the win, that's when you pump them. So the Skull Clamp's actually helping you in that area where you're trying to get the cards you need.
Skull Clamp is still amazing, though, because let's say you do draw it late game and your board's been wiped. It's great. You get a restart. You don't need to worry about cards like Celestial Crusader or whatever that gives your creatures +1/+1.
Mm-hmm,
you can get the engine going again and then draw into your wins, you know.
It's true. Think of it with Nahiri.
Oh, yeah.
You +2 and you can equip it for free. So it's not, you don't even have to pay the 1 to draw the 2 cards.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
She just reads +2,
really good...
draw 2 cards, which is pretty good if Skull Clamp's out.
Yeah, pretty good. You want to talk about the next one, though? Because Skull Clamp is old news.
We've talked about it a lot. Yeah. Comeuppance.
Yeah,
this card is a cool one. Mm-hmm. At first, this is not generally the type of effect that I like.
Really?
For once, it's one time.
Right.
For one, it's one time only. It almost reads like a fog effect, but the more I thought about it, the more I was like, wait, this can really be a one-sided board wipe?
Yeah, it's an ulti battle trick.
Yeah, it's a 3 and a white for an instant. I'm going to paraphrase, but it says, prevent all damage that would be dealt to you and planeswalkers you control. And then instead, each creature that would deal damage to you deals that much damage to itself. Or any spells that would deal damage to you deal that much damage to their controller.
Well, it's if damage from... Yeah, non, if it's prevented...
It is prevented, because comeuppance prevents it.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It basically, for one turn, makes you invincible from damage.
And you get your comeuppance.
And all of that stuff rebounds onto the stuff that's hitting you. So it's like if you got attacked with like 4/4/4 creatures, you play comeuppance, all four of those 4/4 creatures are going to die.
Yep.
Won't take any damage.
The only case where they don't die is if they're like 4/5s, because they just do four of themselves.
Yeah, which is rare, but it might come
up.
It
happens. But I feel like... it seems like it's just a great defense against the meta of the other decks, specifically the green one, or any just kind of token generation decks, or even the itself, you know, that make things with like coat of arms or whatever. Like, because 15/15/15 swing at you is not that scary when you have comeuppance in your hand.
Or like Kiki Jiki going infinite, Splinter Twin going infinite.
Right.
A lot of that are predicated on attacking you with an arbitrary amount of some things or one thing that's arbitrarily large.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like Deflecting Palm that way, but it works. Deflecting Palm only works if one big thing's hitting you.
Yeah.
But this works with any number of things hitting you.
Yeah.
Including spells.
Yeah. So if someone fireball you for 40.
That happens. You make infinite mana, fireball everybody for 100, you know, or... Fireball everybody for 1,000. You can be like, okay, but I live and you die. You know,
it's kind of funny if someone goes infinite with Kiki Jiki and like makes 1,000
Pestermites or something.
Yeah, Pestermites, and he swings. So like, okay, 500 at you, 300 at you, and you're like, haha, everyone's gonna die but me and this Kiki Jiki.
So
player.
I just won. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and EDH really works that way, where like somebody does some big infinite combo and they kill everyone, but this actually can really
win
you the game in those instances.
Yeah.
And plus, if you play this one time in your play group, they have to be scared of it every time.
Every time, yeah. They have to play around it.
So it really hampers them. Because if they make infinite Pestermites, they're gonna be like, what are you at? So they have to swing at you with enough that would kill you. Won't kill them. And sometimes it's like that.
But leave their board big enough that you couldn't swing back and kill them or whatever.
Right.
Unless they're casting a spell. In that case, they have to be really careful, because otherwise they're just losing their creatures.
Right. Right. Yeah. Anyway, I like this card a lot.
Yeah, I do too. Next up is Containment Priest. And this has been making splashes as well because it costs less than 3 mana. It's 2 mana. And it means it can be played in a lot of other formats.
Yeah. People are talking Legacy playable for this one.
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not, but in any case, it is interesting.
Yeah, it's 1 and a white for a creature that has flash. It's a 2/2, and if a non-choking creature would enter the battlefield and it wasn't cast, exile it instead.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. The reason it says non-token creatures is because you can play like Triplicate Spirits, and a token enters the battlefield, but you're still technically casting something to make it happen.
It also doesn't stop Kiki Jiki and Splinter Twin and things like that, so it's a little downside, but it does stop like flicker effects.
Mm-hmm.
It does stop all this cheating of, you know, Quicksilver Amulet, Aether Vial, Birthing Pod, anything, these effects that cheat stuff into play.
Anything that cheats stuff into play. Yeah, Tooth and Nail, Quicksilver Amulet.
Show and Tell, Sneak Attack. There's a million of these, and they're very powerful, and they're used in EDH a lot.
Yeah.
Because what do we always talk about? Cheating the cost of things is one of the most broken things you can do in Magic. Maybe the most broken thing you can do in Magic is to, you know, find a loophole in the mana cost of something. And so something that stops that, especially since white itself is not particularly good at cheating the mana cost of something,
right.
Like a mono white deck isn't going to even want to try and do that stuff. It just doesn't have those type of cards. So, you know, this is going to depend on your meta. I don't think it's an automatic include, but if you have a couple of prominent decks that are cheating stuff out, cheating big creatures out, then it can just totally hose them.
Yeah, I really like this. It's flash, too. You can do it instant.
You can basically
speed.
Counter something.
Yeah, it's 2 mana to counter something. And then once this guy hits the battlefield, it stays that way. Our friend Eli, who also edits this podcast, has a card in his Prosh deck that essentially puts out all of the Eldrazi.
Mm-hmm.
Containment Priest would kill, would exile every single one of those
cards.
None
of them would ever hit the battlefield. Yeah.
For two mana, too, which is, that's the important thing, is that you can do it for a cheap amount, and it just gets out there.
The last card under best cards is Mentor of the Meek.
So good.
This is a really good card, yeah. And especially because it does something white's very bad at.
Yep.
So it's two and a white for a 2/2 creature. Whenever a creature with power 2 or less enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay 1 colorless mana. If you do, draw a card.
Right.
So it's card draw, and you're putting tokens out. So think of like Nomad's Assembly.
Yeah.
You cast it, it puts 6 dudes out, 7 dudes out, and then you can just pay as many colorless as you want.
As you have, and you draw that many cards.
Yeah, so up to, you know, as many creatures as mm-hmm. are created. But you don't have to draw the full amount either. You can just be like, I'll just draw 3 or 4.
The important thing about this card, too, is that it's doesn't say non-token.
Right.
And this is a deck with tokens, and you're going to be pumping out so many guys.
And all your tokens are going to be power 2 or less.
Yep.
So it's very powerful, and again, it's white just doesn't have a lot of card draw engines.
Yeah.
So you need to really play the ones that you do have, and this is one of the better ones.
Yeah, definitely. I like this a lot.
Yeah. Okay, do we want to talk about some of the cards we think are bad?
Yeah.
The worst cards.
We shouldn't spend too much time on this because they are bad. Brave the Elements.
Yeah.
Instant for one white, just one total. Instant, choose a color. White creatures you control gain protection from the chosen color until end of turn.
This seems good. It seems good.
Does not stop a board wipe.
Doesn't do anything against a board wipe, which is your biggest fear in a token deck because you make, 80 tokens, and if somebody board wipes, you're just back to square one.
Yeah.
And then also, like, I know a lot of people are thinking, but I'll make my guys unblockable, and then I'll just kill them. Listen, you can only pick one color, for one thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of decks running multicolor, so they'll still be able to block some of your stuff. Also, like, if you're in a token deck and you're worried about their blockers, you are doing it wrong. Yeah, you should just have so many guys, it doesn't matter.
You're going wide here. Yeah. You're not trying to make your guy unblockable like in a Rafik deck or whatever. You're hitting them with so much that they put their entire army in front of it, and you still have 50 things on both sides that are still rushing in at you.
Yeah, exactly. So this card's just really, I think it's really, really bad. It maybe be good if you put Kemba at the helm and you just had to protect him. Even then, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm just trying to think of like the weird border cases when you're going to use this on defense instead of offense and when it might matter.
Seems randomly weird.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if you like need to stop another token, like a green token from overrunning you, you block them all. I don't know. I really have no idea.
Yeah, don't like it. Take it out. Take it out, peeps.
Take it out.
The next one is Sky Hunter Skirmisher. This is 1/2 white for a 1/1 cat knight. That's 3 mana for a 1/1.
It's a cat knight, though.
Yeah,
I don't think there are any cat knights out there.
It has flying and double strike. That's it. If you're waiting for more, that's it.
I was literally holding my breath. I was waiting.
What else does it have?
Nothing. I don't know. Nothing.
Absolutely
nothing.
This card, it seems rather worthless. I know it's in this deck because of equipment.
Yeah.
But there's just so many better cards. Like Flicker Wisp is a million times better than this card.
Yeah, I agree.
And not particularly good in this deck, but at least it's a 3/1 for the same amount.
Yeah.
The double strike just to me is not worth it. And then it creates the need for another card to make it good. And even then, it's just like mediocre.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It doesn't really do it for me. There's lots
doesn't
of
do enough.
Yeah. Especially at that like that level of mana cost, there's so many great 3-drops that you want to be playing instead. Which leads us to our next terrible card, White Mane Lion, 1/1, 2/2, flash. When White Mane Lion enters the battlefield, return a creature you control to its owner's hand.
There are decks that want this card. There's Animar decks, maybe Flicker decks.
Well, Animar can't even play this, but Flicker decks, Rune.
Sorry. But decks that want to continuously recast their things because they have some sort of enter the battlefield effects. You notice when I did the statistical breakdown of the white deck, there's not a category that I listed that says cards with enter the battlefield effects because there's only a couple. And they're really expensive.
And they're good. Twilight Shepherd is awesome, but
it's just...
You really only need to play Twilight Shepherd once.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's just, if you only have 3 cards in your deck that this card affects, it's not worth playing it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so definitely out of here, White Mane Lion. Get out.
Yeah, get out. Get out of here.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah, Mentor of the Meek says get out of here. He doesn't like you.
Yeah, Mentor of the Meek's like, I am way better than you. Mentor of the Meek's kind of a jerk.
He is, but
he draws me cards, so he's
not a jerk. He deserves it. He's so cool. Man, I added him into the cards I think you should add and then realized he's actually in the deck. I'm like, well, there you go, perfect.
You're like, Wizard agrees with me.
Yeah. By the way, this deck is very similar to the deck we talked about in Deck Tech Daydreams. So make sure you guys check out that episode. I think it was episode 17 where we talked about that, because there are some cards that we won't mention today that do fit very well into this deck as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because we talked about a mono-white token deck that Jimmy wanted to build, so we talked about a bunch of cards that would work in here. We're going to mention a few really quick.
How convenient.
There's one, it's a little over the $5 limit that we usually set for ourselves when we're discussing cards. We don't like to talk about cards that are really expensive. It's just not attainable for most people. What we're looking to help you do here is buy this deck, take it out of the box, and then for less than $20 be able to improve it quite a bit.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like you don't want to buy one $30 card. You'd rather buy six $5 cards.
Because one $30 card just won't affect enough games to
really
be worth it.
And you're not going to see it very often, yeah.
Yeah, because how often are you going to draw that one card? It's not that often. So if you can instead replace a bunch of these cards with, you know, 15 $1 cards, that's going to really affect, you know, you're going to see one or two of those cards every time you play the deck. So.
Yeah, exactly.
But there is one card I want to talk about.
It's worth
$7.
It. No, it's a little more now.
Oh, crap.
But it's Josh, it's worth it.
Chroma's Memorial is the card. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, it's a 7-drop artifact. May seem like a lot, but creatures you control have, count them, flying, first strike, vigilance, trample, haste, and protection from black and red. That's 7 effects for 7 mana.
It's crazy.
And oh my gosh.
And the one we really care about is haste.
Haste.
Because token decks want to do this thing where they suddenly dump out like 100 tokens literally onto the board.
Yeah.
And then swing with them in that same turn because they don't want to give a rotation of the table, give everybody a chance to board wipe.
Yep.
So.
And very rarely do you see haste effects in white.
Yeah, it's really hard for white to get haste effects.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that red's the king of that. Green has a little. White has basically none, and you have to go to artifacts. And there's not a lot of artifacts that give your whole team haste.
Mm-hmm.
So this thing is, I think it's, if in order for the deck to be really good, you really need this card in it.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean you have to do it right away, but at some point, if you want to keep working on this deck, I feel like a Chroma's Memorial has to be a piece.
Yeah, and the protection, too, was amazing.
Yeah.
The fact is also your tokens need to not only be able to swing for the win, but they need to get through.
The
so flying and vigilance and trample are very important as well. So a Chroma's Memorial, just overall, baller card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ooh, I like this next one. Soul of Theros. This is a card that came out in M15. Has seen a little bit of a standard play, actually, too. It's a 6-drop, and the Soul series, if you remember, they have the same activated ability, but you can do it once from the graveyard and exile that card, or you can do it as many times if it's alive and on the battlefield. So Soul of Theros is 4/2 white for a 6/6 with vigilance, and creatures you control get +2/+2 and gain first strike and lifelink until end of turn. Sweet. First strike is very nice, too, especially if they're trying. I mean, here's the thing, is like, you won't always be able to do the full overrun win where you drop 100 things and go all at once. Sometimes you need to be able to win a more middle game where maybe you've been wiped a couple of times and you only have 10 guys out in the battlefield. But if those guys all have first strike...
And +2/+2?
Yeah, they're going to be able to get in for a lot of damage. They're going to be able to get through a lot of blockers as well.
Doesn't it give them lifelink?
Yes.
So, and like, we don't like life gain, but we don't mind incidental life gain.
Mm-hmm.
See, that it can matter. It's not that life gain can't ever matter. It's just that it doesn't matter enough to only do that. But if something has some, it does all these two things and it gives you some life, that life is worth something. So I think the lifelink is, you know, it's reasonable to sort of affect the game.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
So, yeah, I think that card's great because, again, and he's a dude. Like,
and you can do it every turn if you have him up.
Yep.
That's the nice thing.
Yep.
It's not a single one-time effect.
The next card, Mind's Eye. We've talked about this one before. It's a 5-costed artifact, so 5-colorless. Whenever an opponent draws a card, you may pay 1. If you do, draw a card. So it's like Mind's Eye, but for other people drawing cards.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, it's like a Mentor of the Meek. Mm-hmm. But instead of when a creature enters, it's when everybody else draws a card. White just doesn't have much card draw.
Yeah.
And this is one of the better ones that you can get from artifacts, and you just need more card draw spells. This is not the only one. This is just one of the better ones. So I would go and probably try and add 2, 3, maybe 4 cards that draw you more cards in this deck.
Next up is Machias the Lunark.
Machias.
Yeah, this card is, I can't believe it's not an expensive card because it's so sweet. It's X and a white for a 0/0. And as you might expect, he enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it. You can tap him to put a +1/+1 counter on himself, or more importantly, you can tap him, remove a +1/+1 counter from Mikaias, put a +1/+1 counter on each other creature you control. Ah!
That's, it can get out of hand so
fast.
Yeah,
it can get out of hand.
Yeah.
Go 2 turns in Mikaias and you've got a permanent +2/+2 on everyone. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, and you notice, like, in the green deck, we were advocating taking out some of the pump spells and putting in more creature creating spells. This one has a lot of token creating spells, and so but very few pump spells. So we're advocating taking out some of the equipment and putting in more pump spells, a few more pump spells. Because, you know, you're going to get a lot of tokens, but you're probably going to need to pump your team at least one time to kill everybody. So,
yeah.
Coat of Arms still works. Those type of effects.
I mean, that's definitely a card you should add in as well.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to say was, we've talked about this before, but this deck, even more than the rest, needs Thrawn Dynamo, Guild of Lotus, Mind Stone. In fact, I would say keep the diamond, the marble diamond, into this, just because white is not good at ramping.
Yeah.
So it needs artifact help in that area. Like, I just don't think an EDH deck can be really great unless it has a certain amount of ramp possibility.
Yeah.
And right now, the deck only comes with 5 pieces, and I think that's just woefully inadequate. So I would add 5, 6, maybe 7 more.
Yeah, things, do whatever you can.
Yeah, that add ramp. So even bad ones would be worth something in this deck, you know. So
yeah, agreed.
And you put one on here that I think is really good, is Mass Calcify.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's
That's your best board wipe you could ask for.
This is White's Cyclonic Rift, and Cyclonic Rift is like one of the best spells in all of EDH. It's 5/2 white for a sorcery. Destroy all non-white creatures. It's a one-sided board wipe, although you have to think some people may be playing white, but it's going to destroy most other things, and it'll destroy nothing of yours.
Yeah, and if you're trying to overrun someone, just even if you're taking out half their forest, it's going to help you out that much more in the long run. Same with a card like Devout Invocation, 6 and a white for a sorcery. Tap any number of untapped creatures you control. Put a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying on the battlefield for each creature tapped this way.
If you have a Chroma's Memorial out, I pretty much guarantee if you play Devout Invocation, you win the game.
Yeah, it's just it's like upgrade.
Yeah. Oh, all my guys become 4/4 flyers, and if I can attack with them right now, I probably just win.
Yeah, pretty solid.
The white deck looks good. I think, you know, it needs some work. I would take out a lot of that equipment. I would put in a few more token generators and a few more things that pump guys, and then I think it's strong. I mean, I have a deck. It's got green in it and red also, but it's still a token deck.
Yeah.
And token decks are really powerful.
I would really... I would lay the cards out as well and see what their casting cost is and when you're going to be able to cast certain things, and make sure that you're not too much on the high end, because a lot of these cards, like Chroma's Memorial, have a high casting cost. If you can't, you won't be able to play like 2 things in a turn that could win you the game, essentially. You have to make sure that you are able to sequence your spells right.
So, and white has real trouble just generating a lot of things that make mana, so that a lot of other colors, they can be on turn 8 or 9 and be like the ability to pump out like 20 mana. White just usually doesn't have that. So, yeah, it's really smart to pay attention to your curve when you're building the deck.
Yes, sir.
For white specifically. Okay. Let's move on to your favorite, Jimmy.
My favorite.
This is your moment.
This is my moment. That's a Rebecca Black song. It always gets stuck in my head when someone says, this is your moment.
Thank you. You want to sing some more of it?
No, I don't. That's it. I've embarrassed myself enough for this weekend at BlizzCon, so...
you can't tell, we got destroyed.
Yeah, we got destroyed. We can't,
in front of like 50,000 people.
We literally can't
mention
it enough.
Yeah.
How badly we got wrecked. Yeah. I was looking at a replay. I think the level was like 19 to 15. They were like 4 levels up on us at one point.
I think we only got 1 kill to 23 kills for them in the last game. So we did reach level 6 before they reached level 5.
Oh.
Everyone listening is like, what the hell are you guys talking about? Hey, just go look up the replays of Heroes of the Storm. Wait.
Don't
do that.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't just do that. Take it for what we've given it to you.
Go watch somebody else play Heroes of the Storm, though. It's a cool game.
It's a cool game.
Yeah, don't watch us play. That's
don't
all.
Watch us play, yeah.
All right,
Mono
the red deck.
This is my deck. I may convert my Norn the Wary deck one more time.
Wow.
From Kiki Jiki to Norn the Wary to Duretti.
Wow.
You're feeling more of the Felden, but let's talk about the red deck.
Yeah.
Let's get some notes.
Okay, so I did the statistical breakdown. Here we go. Wrath and Mass Removal, there are 4 cards. Single target removal, there's really only 1, which is interesting.
Yeah.
There are about 6 ramp cards, only 4 card draw cards, which that's a worry. There are 37 artifacts.
Boosh.
Bow. That tells you pretty much everything you need to know right there. There are 6 cards that create artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
There's artifact recursion, or things that say you want artifacts to die, basically. There are 9 of those.
But the artifacts don't care if they die. They just, you know.
Well, in this deck.
Yeah, they just crumple away.
And then
feelings.
But this deck wants you to put artifacts into the graveyard and bring them out. And then there are cards with enter the battlefield effects or effects that say when it dies. There are 13 of those. Now, obviously, those numbers don't add up because some of the artifacts are things with enter the battlefield or things that want to die. But
yeah, and some of the enter the battlefield things are not artifacts. They're just like, hey, make some more goblins.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this list tells us exactly what this deck wants to do. It's very artifact heavy. It wants to use those artifacts effects repeatedly by sacrificing them, bringing them back, reoccurring them, you know, copying them,
yeah,
sacrificing them again, making them again, like just getting value off of artifact triggers and things like that. It looks very powerful too.
Yeah, let's not kid around. I think this is the most powerful of all the decks by far.
Yeah, I think so.
It's got also the most value. It's got some awesome reprints in there. I mean, me being red has me ecstatic and is no way like changing my opinion to like this more. This deck really, I think, is just the best out of all five.
It's cool, though, too, because you have a really strong mono-red deck, and red gets a bad rap. It's thought of sort of as the weakest color in EDH for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
But this is another totally different way than you built your deck to go, so it's pretty interesting.
It's really cool. All right, let's talk about the
commanders.
Three guys now. We got Tuk-Tuk the Explorer, who's a 2 and a red for a 1-1 with haste, legendary goblin. When Tuk-Tuk the Explorer dies, play a legendary 5/5 colorless goblin golem artifact creature token named Tuk-Tuk the Returned onto the battlefield.
So he dies and he creates a 5/5 artifact. This is just not powerful enough for EDH.
Yeah, it's not even good enough for anything.
He's fine in the deck, actually, because he makes an artifact.
Yeah, he makes an artifact. The only thing is that he costs 3, and I just don't know. I don't know if I'm...
He's good with something like Kiki Jiki.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about Kiki. He's expensive.
Well, actually, he's not because... Well, actually...
Well, he dies, so at the end of the turn...
Well, here's the thing. He's a legendary creature, so as soon as you make a copy of him with Kiki, that you can choose the copy to die, so...
You choose the original die, makes a 5/5, then you've got a Tuk-Tuk, and then he dies at the end of the turn because he's Kiki tokens die at the end of the turn.
Right.
Then you make another 5/5.
I was just thinking you just keep making the copy die so you could always keep making more Tuk-Tuks.
Oh, that's true. Actually, then you always have Tuk-Tuk out.
But if you know that someone's going to get rid of Kiki or something, you can get 2 5/5 colorless goblins.
You're right, though. It's better to just sacrifice the token and then do it again next turn. It's... Even making 1 5/5 for turn is just... In EDH, that's fine. It's just not game-breaking.
Yeah, it's not game-breaking.
Yeah, he's okay. Let's just dismiss him. okay, so I'll read Felden. Felden of the Third Path.
This guy's great.
He's 1/2 red for a legendary creature, human artificer. He's a 2/3. He says, pay 2 and a red and tap him. Put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of target creature card in your graveyard, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types. It gains haste. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. So he's
nice.
He's like Kiki Jiki, but only for creatures in the graveyard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And he costs 3 to do it.
Yeah, and he costs 3 to do it. Listen, this is totally powerful because Kiki Jiki is one of the most powerful cards ever created.
Yep.
And he's doing a similar effect.
And he wants to abuse enter the battlefield effects.
Yes.
It also, a lot of cards that do this kind of thing exile the card that it's copying or whatever. Felden doesn't. He keeps it in there.
Felden, you can copy the same thing the next turn and the next turn and the next turn and the next turn. Also, it's making an artifact. There's a lot of cards in the deck that say when an artifact you control goes to the graveyard or when an artifact you control enters the battlefield or when an artifact you control or you can sacrifice artifacts you control for some effect.
Well, he also has amazing synergy with Goblin Welder.
Yes.
Because he can just switch out the token and replace it with any other artifact.
With the real thing.
Yeah, with the real thing or anything else, really.
Yeah, this is, we're going to debate it, I think, but this is my pick for who I would have front man of the deck because the recursion ability is so strong and the synergy is so strong. But I can't fault anyone for going with the next guy, so let's read him.
Yeah, Duretti Scrap Savant, Planeswalker Duretti. He's 3 and a red. He's the big one. He's the one that comes on the box. You get the big version of him. He comes in with 3 loyalty points. His +2, discard up to 2 cards, then draw that many cards. Not bad. It's
not bad.
A pretty typical red effect. You don't get to draw anything for free. You always have to discard some stuff. But as you can see, -2, sacrifice an artifact. If you do, return target artifact card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So those abilities, like Nahiri's, work very well in conjunction with each other.
Because you want stuff in your graveyard.
Yep.
Yep.
Same with Felden, of course. And his -10 is that you get an emblem with, whenever an artifact is put into your graveyard from the battlefield, return that card to the battlefield at the beginning of the next end step. Nice.
That's crazy.
That is, that's unbelievable.
They just can never, unless they exile, they can't get rid of your artifacts. Mm-hmm. They just keep bouncing back into play. And like we said,
it's like Marchesa a little bit.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It is very a Marchesa ability, except you don't even have to go the extra mile of getting counters on him.
Yeah, it just comes back.
It is a negative 10, and he starts at 3, though. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing as Nahiri, where it's going to take you 5 turns,
and he can't
be touched.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good ability. You just can't pick him because of that. So you have to look at the other two abilities, and I think they're strong. You think Duretti should be the general?
Looking at Felden and Duretti now, I think Felden should be the general. Because he comes in with 3. You get to do his most important thing, which is sacrifice an artifact and return an artifact from a graveyard to the battlefield. Felden gets to do that every turn. Now, sure, you lose the artifact and it gets sacrificed, but you don't need it to stay there necessarily.
You're getting the effect, and
you get to choose something every turn. Duretti gets to do this once before he will not be able to, because he'll be at 1 loyalty.
That was the thing that swung it for me. If it was a +1 for him to bounce it back, or a 0 even, and he could do it every turn, I would have picked him, because the upside would be, and sometimes I get to rummage. And rummage is when you discard and then draw.
Yeah.
Loot is when you draw and then discard.
Yep.
And rummaging twice is very powerful, and you're right. We want things in the graveyard, so it's a powerful effect. This is a tough one. I think it's really close.
Yeah. I like Felden, though.
Yeah.
Both also because he costs 1 less to cast.
Yes.
And there's ways to give him haste so that you could do it.
You're in red. Haste is going to be easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Felden a little bit more here. I think Duretti's could be really good in more constructive formats, because you're only going to be able to use them once or twice.
Anyway, regardless.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so moving forward, we recommend Felden, but man, if you go with Duretti, I can't think you're
crazy.
Yeah,
I can't fault you either.
Yeah,
he's also sweet, man. Yeah. What a great, great commander.
And then we've got the Lieutenant cycle. It's Tyrant's Familiar. This is an expensive one. It's 5 and 2 red, so 7 total for a dragon, 5/5 flyer with haste. So that's good. It says, Lieutenant, as long as you control your commander, Tyrant's Familiar gets +2/+2 and has, whenever Tyrant's Familiar attacks, it deals 7 damage to target creature defending player controls.
Eh.
This type of effect is really strong in a regular constructive format. And in EDH, it's like, it's okay.
What are you getting rid of that isn't going to piss the person off? You're not. You don't have the choice.
I mean, you're attacking them, so maybe you don't care if you piss them off.
Yeah.
But it's just like,
you don't have the choice to do it to their face either. You know,
that would be way better.
Yeah, and honestly,
then you're just hitting them for 12.
Yeah, and what's this deck trying to do? Is it trying to swing at people and kill them in the air? No,
not really. Yeah, yeah, it's a good point. And he costs 7.
Yeah,
7's just a lot for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, what do we read? Nomad's Assembly, that can possibly create 80 tokens over 2 turns.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how powerful. That costs 6.
Yeah.
This guy costs 7, and it's like, well, he might hit you for 5 and kill one of your creatures.
He's a dragon.
Yeah. It's. I don't know.
I don't want to be familiar with this card in my deck. That's for sure.
Ba-doom-psh.
Ba-doom-psh. The next is Volcanic Offering, and I don't know what's in the art, but it looks like it's the Hooded Hydra.
It looks like a Hydra getting burned.
Yeah. So it's 4 and a red.
We're having some Hydra kebabs.
Yeah. you get 8 kebabs, 1 for each head.
Well, then when you burn them, don't the head split again, so you get 16
kebabs. Oh my gosh, value. Next time you guys are barbecuing, just make sure you pick up some Hydra from your local Ralph's.
Yeah, seriously, it doubles your money.
Volcanic Offering is 4 and a red for an instant. Destroy target non-basic land you don't control and target non-basic land of an opponent's choice you don't control. So your own lands will never die. And then Volcanic Offering deals 7 damage to target creature you don't control and 7 damage to a target creature of an opponent's choice you don't control.
Weird.
A little bit weird.
So it's destroy 2 lands that aren't yours and
deal
kill
7
2 creatures that
7
aren't
damage,
yours.
Yeah. It's like Tyrant's Familiar is text on Volcanic Offering, essentially.
Well, the 7 damage.
The 7 damage bit, yeah.
It just doesn't jive with anything this deck wants to do.
Yeah, and it creates hate.
It's true, because both people that got their land destroyed, they're not going to be like, oh, you destroyed my land, and the other guy's going to be like, but that other player destroyed. No, you played the card. Like,
yeah,
you just
exactly.
chose my land, but, like, yeah, I don't know. This card, like, unless you're playing some sort of dedicated land destruction strategy, which this only destroys 2 lands, it's still probably not all that worth it, but I don't know. This card, maybe there's a place for it in some deck, but it's not this one right now.
Yeah, I think if you're going for a really aggro red deck, I think this could be really good. We're trying to maybe clear off the board or, I don't know, wipe the board. I don't know. I just can't see this doing too well, especially when you're in a deck that has artifacts and not as many creatures. You're not going to be able to defend yourself against someone that swings against you for, you know, making them pissed off or whatever.
It just doesn't do that much.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the green one has the chance to create a 20/20 creature and 20/1/1 elves.
Right? Yeah.
This one destroys two lands and maybe kills two creatures.
Yeah, I think in terms of maybe...
And you don't even get to pick all of those.
Maybe this is good because you pissed people off the least.
I guess.
No, I guess. You're destroying a land. No one's going to like you for that.
Land destruction draws more hate.
But the interesting thing here is, though, that your opponent gets to choose whose other land gets wrecked.
Right.
So they could bring on themselves a lot of hate.
I guess, but you still played the card, so you'll still get a little of it.
Yeah.
I just think, like, let's say the card said was the same exact casting cost, so it's four and a red for an instant, and it said destroy two non-basic lands and deal seven damage to two different creatures.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
It'd be good, but it wouldn't be ridiculous.
Yeah.
It'd be
but
fine.
But the fact that you get to do two, and you get to do seven damage to two things by yourself is
That's
great.
What it does, but you just only get to pick half of the targets. I just think even if you got to pick all the targets, it's still, like, only okay. It's not like crazy.
Yeah.
It's fine. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would look to be taking both the familiar and the offering out of this deck. They just don't go with the theme.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about the best cards.
Okay.
This one's my favorite. I play him in every...
so good.
Yeah. Every time I change my red deck around a little bit, this guy, I look at him like, you will never leave this deck. Goblin Welder. One red for a 1/1 Goblin Artificer. Similar to Felden, he's an Artificer as well. Tap him. Choose target artifact a player controls and target artifact card in that player's graveyard. If both targets are still legal as this ability resolves, that player simultaneously sacrifices the artifact and returns the artifact card to the graveyard. So they add a little bit of text here saying if both targets are still legal as this ability resolves. So someone could, you know, use a Scavenging Ooze and get rid of a card in their life.
You could always do that before, but it's just clarifying. Basically, you take an artifact in play and an artifact in the graveyard and you swap them.
Yeah.
And you either choose yourself to do that or another player to do
that.
And you choose all the targets, even if it's another player. So you can, somebody's got a really powerful artifact in play and a weak one in the graveyard, you just go boom. You can also do it in instant speed. So you can sort of like hose them. Like they make a bunch of tokens, drop a coat of arms. You all of a sudden put that coat of arms in the graveyard and bring out a soul ring, which does nothing. And all their guys that were just 9/10s are now 0/1s.
Yep.
You can do that. But the best way to use it is on your own stuff.
On your own stuff, because you know you're going to be putting artifact cards in your graveyard. And the fact that you can do it to an opponent and really just hose them on a really powerful artifact is incredibly awesome. Mm-hmm. But it's a little too dependent to always rely on that being sort of like the go-to of this card. It's just a really nice option. Otherwise, Goblin Welder does what Duretti kind of does, where you get to sacrifice an artifact and replace it with another one.
It's broken because it's broken. Another cheat the mana cost thing. So you can be, I played an artifact that costs one and I'm going to swap it with something that costs seven.
Yep.
You know, that's just cheating mana cost. Most broken thing you can do.
Yeah. And like we said with Felden, he makes an artifact card. He could be bringing a creature that's an artifact and it's going to die anyway. With the Goblin Loader, you can just swap it out with another artifact.
A real artifact or the artifact you copied originally. Also, if you have two artifacts and both have Enter the Battlefield effects, you can just swap them for each other every turn and just
like Solemn Simulacrum.
Get Solemn Simulacrum and anything else with the Enter the Battlefield effect. Well, Solemn Simulacrum has a Leave the Battlefield effect too.
Yeah.
And so every turn you're just like, I swap the Solemn for this other thing, and then I swap the thing for the Solemn, and then I swap the Solemn for this thing, and you can just rotate your Enter the Battlefield and Leave the Battlefield effects.
And Felden's making a copy of it too, just for giggles. Yep.
And it's just pure value. And Goblin Welder doesn't cost any mana to do it. That's the crazy thing. It's one red to cast him, and then you just tap him to do it.
Yeah.
This card is amazing.
Yeah. It's definitely my favorite reprint. I'm so glad to see it in here because it's great.
Yeah, it's great. Next one, this is a big one, Worm Coil Engine.
Nice.
Everyone's talking about it. This was a, $30 card or so?
Yeah, I think it was like 20 or something, and now it's steadily decreasing.
Oh, yeah, of course. Because
the foil versions aren't, but of course, you know, that makes sense.
But it's that expensive because it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's 6 mana for a 6/6 worm. It's an artifact. Has Death Touch and Lifelink. When it dies, it basically splits into 2/3/3 creatures. One has lifelink, one has death touch.
Yep. And the tokens, you get the tokens with the deck too, and the tokens are actually worth something too because they were hard to attain.
Yeah, that's... Actually, the tokens were worth quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're probably going to decline too. But, okay, so you got Solemn Simulacrum and Worm Coil Engine.
Oh my gosh.
And one's in the graveyard, and you got Goblin Welder. And so every turn you make 2/3/3...
Fetch a land and draw a card.
Yeah. That's the type of stuff... And also with Felden... If Worm Coil Engine is in the graveyard, you can make a 3/3 life linker and a 3/3 death toucher every turn.
Every turn, yeah.
Just boom, 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 boom. Like,
It's not broken.
It's broken.
It's ridiculously broken. It's value is what it is.
Yeah, ooh. It's just free. reoccurring value. Those don't cost you cards to do it. You can do that every turn for in addition to whatever cards you're drawing. So,
yeah. We like this guy. We've talked about the card Fork before on the show, and Dual Caster Mage is
Fork
on a stick for one more mana. It's one and two red, so three total for a 2/2 human wizard with flash. When Dual Caster Mage enters the battlefield, copy target instant or sorcery spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. So you can use the counterspell. You can use it to double something up. You can do it at flash speed. It's an instant for three.
The counterspell thing, I think people haven't thought about this. You have if you have Felden out, it's now two and a red to counter a counterspell.
Oh, yeah.
As long as Dual Caster's in your graveyard.
Yep.
Because you do it at instant speed, you know, you make the copy of him, he pops out, copies their counter, you counter their counter.
Ugh.
Yeah. Or any other cool instance or sorceries anybody casts, like, hey, I want to take two extra turns. Shoot, I want to take two
extra
turns.
Shoot, me too, yeah.
Yeah. Like, this card is crazy, because EDH is just full of, like, huge game-breaking instance and sorcery stuff, and it's like, not just do you get to do him, use his ability, you get to reoccur it with Felden, like, once he's dead, as many times as you want.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's just really powerful. It does everything you want to do, especially because red can't really counter that much. Mm-hmm. Outside of maybe, like, I don't know, pyroblasting a blue spell, which
yeah,
you don't want
to
run.
Fork's the way to do
it.
Fork's the
best way to do it, and Dual Caster Mage is, like, a redundant way of doing it that you can recur with Felden, specifically. So really cool. I like this guy a lot.
Yeah, and I think they've been talking about him as, like, powerful enough to maybe play in Legacy and
I can see that happening.
So, yeah. The last one we've talked about before, I'll hit it really quick, though, because it is amazing, is Chaos Warp.
It's only ever been printed in Commander,
and it
is great.
It's great. Every red deck pretty much needs to have this.
Yeah.
Mono red, anyway. It's a tuner red for an instant. The owner of target permanent shuffles it into his or her library, then reveals the top card of the library, and if it's a permanent, puts it into play.
Right. Second part, not as important, because
a lot of times it's a land. It's rare.
Even if it doesn't become something you want it to be, it's going to be probably better for you.
It's not
going to
be their commander, probably.
Yeah, it's going to be better for you than whatever you sent into their library.
I mean, you're literally playing this because the thing is going to kill you or severely hurt you.
Yeah.
And so the thing that they get, maybe it's a creature, maybe it's a land, maybe it's
artifact,
an artifact.
Enchantment, whatever.
It's just probably, the likelihood that it's a silver bullet against your deck is pretty low.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And this is a really good way to tuck somebody else's general, which is super powerful. We've talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
But red just can't do it except for this one card.
Yeah, and Chaos Warp is that card. So,
and you can Dual Caster Mage it and do two things if
you want
to.
Holy crap, look at that. And it's target permanent, too. That's the best thing. It's not non-land. You can address anything. So,
All right. Pretty exciting.
Let's talk about
the
worst.
Bad worst cards.
Ruby Medallion. I'm interested. Why did you put Ruby Medallion?
Because there's 37 artifacts in the deck.
Aha.
So, there's the Medallion Cycle, and they're good in all the decks because the Medallion Cycle basically says it's there's one for each color, and it says spells of that color cost one colorless less to cast, and they're really good. They're great in all the monocolored decks. This deck is actually like more artifacts than it is red spells.
Yeah.
So you're playing a spell that reduces the casting cost by one of something like 35% of your spells. It's just not worth it to me.
Yeah, I agree.
I would rather have a Mana Rock, a Thrawn Dynamo. We talk about that card all the time. It should be in all these.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather have a lot of things than something that conditionally ramps me. You know, it's just not going to touch more than half of my spells.
Yeah.
So, I don't like it in this deck, only in this deck.
Exactly. And I'd rather replace it with a card like Cage Sun or something that or that
makes more mana. Cage Sun effectively reduces the casting cost of your artifacts also cuz
yes.
Yeah, yeah. This just if you cast an artifact spell, this does nothing for you.
Does nothing, yeah.
Yeah.
Word of Seizing. I looked at this card when I was trying to make Marchesa deck. Yeah.
It's a good card. It just doesn't fit in this deck. It
doesn't fit in the deck. It's 3/2 red for a threatened effect, which means you get to steal someone's creature. It's an instant with split second, so it's on the stack. People can't counter it, essentially.
The fact that it's instant makes it slightly unique. It makes it a Ray of Command rather than a threatened.
Yeah, because threatens usually cost like 3 mana for a
sorcery
speed.
Yeah.
So 5 mana, split second, instant.
The good thing is like somebody can attack you with two creatures. You can steal one, untap it, block it, block their own thing with their own thing and kill both sometimes. That's great and constructed. In our format, one for one-ing is not, or even two for one-ing is just not that great.
If you're playing tokens, like, oh, I steal a token.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything against like decks going wide. It doesn't really do anything against Voltron decks because, you know, they are usually not concerned. You can't block that thing.
Yeah, or they have hexproof, so.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't steal the thing attacking you, and usually can't steal another creature to block it.
Yeah.
And you're usually just not like one creature attacking away from killing everybody.
Yeah.
You know, so every once in a while, somebody's got a, what's that, Scourge of...
Scourge of the Throne?
Yeah, and if you took that, you get two of combat phases. And I'm not saying you could never use this card. I'm just saying it's just going to be lucky whether it does anything awesome or whether it does something that's sort of like... Wah, wah, wah.
Agreed, yeah. And if you haven't figured it out, you untap a target permanent and you gain control of it till end of turn and it gains haste.
Oh, yeah, so, sorry. We didn't expand the threaten part.
Yeah.
Yeah. You steal somebody's stuff for one turn. The instant thing is what makes it better than normal, but it's just not doing anything this deck cares about.
Yep.
The next card I'm not really in love with, or we're not really in love with, is Bitter Feud.
Yeah.
It's 4 and a red for an enchantment. It seems interesting. This might go in my chaos deck. As Bitter Feud enters the battlefield, choose two players. If a source controlled by one of those players would deal damage to the other, or a permanent either player controls, that source deals damage, double that damage instead. So it basically doubles any damage, anything they're doing does to the other guy's stuff.
It's like Gisela a little bit.
It's an interesting card because what it's trying to do is create enemies out of two players.
Yeah.
You know,
it's creating a bitter feud, as the card would tell you.
Yeah. It's like, okay, I'm going to incite these two to attack each other because they basically get double the effect anytime they do anything to each other.
Mm-hmm.
What this is really going to do is make people, because it's not subtle.
Yeah.
So they're going to be like, hey, jerk, I know what you're trying to do. Let's both kill that guy.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
They'll be like,
you're creating unlikely allies out of these two people instead.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just going to happen a lot of the time. I just think it's too obvious. It's too, like, it's just not a subtle card.
It's too on the nose, huh?
It just isn't likely to work all that often. And again, it's not doing anything that the deck really cares about. Basically, if it doesn't have to do with artifacts in some way or enter the battlefield effects, I just would take it out of this deck. Like, this deck is very streamlined as to what it wants to do. And, you know, trimming fat like this is, you know, one of the ways to make it just even better.
Definitely. Incite Rebellion, 4 and 2 red for a sorcery. For each player, Incite Rebellion deals damage to that player and each creature that player controls equal to the number of creatures he or she controls. It's good against token decks.
Sort of. It's sort sorcery. Of. If it was instant. Now, Rakdos Charm is good against token decks.
Yep, I was just going to say Rakdos Charm.
It's instant in it, so they go, I play 100 tokens, and usually they have something, so they have haste.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go, in response, kill them right then.
This card kill you right then.
Yeah, kill the player right then. Yeah, this card, a lot of times, you're going to be waiting for it. You're going to be like, I have this card, and as soon as...
Oh, I can't wait to drop this bomb. Yeah, and
they're going to go infinite with... Kiki Jiki, and I'm going to, wait, nope, sorcery, doesn't help me.
Yeah, or like, oh, someone board wiped. I guess this card is dead in my hand.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, here's the thing.
It'll do 1 damage to everybody and 1 damage to all the creatures.
Yeah,
like, who cares?
And not to mention it'll also do it to yourself, so it is even more conditional because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't like it.
Don't like it.
Don't like it.
And it's expensive. I'd rather be casting something totally sweet at that point, you know what I mean?
Totally.
All right, okay. Let's talk about some cards you might add. My favorite part, because I can't wait. Also, we did, of course,
to build this deck.
Yeah, we did a Kiki Jiki deck breakdown, so you can go ahead and check out that podcast.
Let's talk about that really quick. They're outside of our $5 rule, so you know it's not for everybody. But Kiki and
himself.
Splinter Twin both,
yeah,
really good in this deck because you're going to be stacking a lot of enter the battlefield and leave the battlefield effects, and those both take advantage of both of those things.
Yep.
So just copying Solemn Simulacrum is like pretty great.
Pretty great.
So, and Wyrmcoil Engine, pretty great. Like, those cards just fit right in with what the deck wants to do. Now, they're expensive, you know, they're $20 plus or whatever, so you don't have to have those cards to make this deck quite a bit better. I'm just saying, if you do or you want to go get them, they're really good choices.
Yeah. Okay. And Kiki can be your commander as well.
Right. Although, I think, Kiki's always good as your commander. I was going
to
say, I think Felden's better in this deck, but I don't know if he is.
Felden's better in this deck, I think, because it's specifically about binning artifacts. Kiki doesn't care about what's in your graveyard. Kiki doesn't want...
There are some... In some ways, it is more powerful to be able to copy something in your graveyard, just because that's where an opponent tries to send something to sort of...
Yeah,
like,
and in general, it's a lot less touchable than something on your battlefield.
Yeah, I mean, not that people don't run graveyard hate, but they run a lot more battlefield hate than they do graveyard hate.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
You want to read the first one?
Oh, you go for it. It's your choice.
Okay. Copper Gnomes.
They're cute.
They're cute. It's two mana for a 1/1 artifact creature. It says, pay 4, sacrifice Copper Gnomes. Choose an artifact card in your hand and put it into play.
Cheating.
Cheating stuff into play.
Always good. Not to mention, this guy can come back and do it again next turn.
Yep, because you can just Felden him. Yep. And then
Felden's ready. Do whatever you want.
Yep. Or, yeah. It's just cheating stuff into play. Cheating stuff into play. Yeah. Always awesome.
Nice utility. Helps you get something also out way earlier.
I mean, if you just put a Darksteel Colossus into play on turn 4.
Blightsteel,
I mean,
either. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Blightsteel Colossus into play on turn 4. You
win.
Yeah. It's just really hard that early in the game for. I mean, you're at least killing somebody.
Yeah. You're definitely killing
somebody.
You're
probably killing two people. So maybe the third guy could figure out an answer by the time.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe he's just shaking in the corner. Don't kill me.
Don't do it, please. my card, Krark Clan Ironworks. 4 drop artifact. Sacrifice an artifact. Add 2 to your mana pool.
Yep. So.
You can sacrifice itself as well. This is just a great way to also excel. Do the same thing. Getting stuff out for cheaper.
Ramp.
Especially if you don't really care if the artifact needs to be there or not. You know?
In fact, a lot of times you would rather it was in the graveyard. So mm-hmm. This is a good way to get things there. You know, that happens, funnily enough, with decks like this, where it's just like you have a general and it affects things in the graveyard. And you're like, man, I just need something to get my cards into that graveyard so I can use them with my general.
Yeah,
so that's
exactly.
You not only do that, but you get an upside, which is 2 more mana.
Yeah.
Astronaut's Altar is a similar along those lines. It only works for creatures, but...
Well, you've got ways to make creatures in this deck, too, which is nice, because I think every deck actually has token abilities, which is kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. You've got Mirror Battlesphere, you've got Wormcoil Engine, you've got guys that make goblins.
Thopter Assembly or whatever.
So you can make a lot of tokens, make a lot of mana, put out huge broken things.
Yeah. All right, Scarecrow, 3-drop artifact creature, Scarecrow. I don't know how many Scarecrows there are in the Magic universe. It's a 1/2. You can pay 1 to sacrifice a Scarecrow, draw a card, or you can pay 4 and tap the card to return target artifact creature card from your graveyard to play.
Seems good.
Seems good.
Yep.
Lots of utility. You can Felden him back out and return another guy back out with him. You can return himself out with his self.
Return himself out with himself, yeah.
Yeah, that's some English for you guys.
There is a card I like called Mycosynth Lattice.
Oh, yeah. This guy's great.
It's an interesting card. It's 6 mana for an artifact. It says, all permanents are artifacts in addition to their other types. Hmm. All cards that aren't in play, spells, and permanents are colorless. Players may spend mana as though it were mana of any color. So what this does is it turns everybody's stuff and the cards in their library and the cards in their hand into artifacts.
Yep.
So you have all these cards that affect artifacts, and now you can affect all this stuff that you wouldn't normally be able to touch. Anything that says destroy an artifact or swap an artifact or any of that stuff, like Goblin Welder becomes godly.
Yeah, oh my gosh, because now you can affect everyone's board.
Yeah, and you can just swap their best stuff for whatever the worst thing in their graveyard is, like all the time. Like it's a really good card in this deck. And you might be running some artifact removal stuff because you already have another card in the deck called Liquimetal Coating,
right?
Which turns one thing into an artifact, but this turns everything.
Everything, yeah.
I mean, cards in the library, it's artifacts. It's pretty crazy.
Everyone's deck is pretty insane. I also like Mindslaver, 6-drop legendary artifact. Tap 4 and tap it. Sacrifice Mindslaver. You control target players next turn.
And the fact that you can recur it with Felden is
just
broken.
Just keep doing it,
I'll take your next turn. Oh, I'll take your next turn. I guess I'll take your next
turn. I think Mindslaver is best in EDH when you're able to bring it back. And this deck gives you so many options.
It's best in Modern when you're able to bring it back, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so.
It's just using it once can sometimes win the game, but using it 3 or 4 times almost always wins the game.
Yeah, exactly. You can just create so much havoc as well across the table.
You can just attack stupidly, block stupidly, do all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's great. A card I thought people may not consider, and I don't know if it's amazing, but I just wanted to put it on there because I love this card and it might be good, is Molten Psyche. And we talked about it before for the Nekusar deck. It basically makes everybody discard their hand and draw that many cards.
Yeah.
But if you have Metalcraft, which means you have 3 graveyards or 3 artifacts in play, which you will.
Yep.
Then everybody takes as damage equal to the amount of cards they've drawn that turn.
Right. So you can just pump it up and have them take a lot.
And you have Dual Caster Mage already in the deck, and you're probably going to want to put Fork and some things like that in there. You can really make people take, you know, all of a sudden take 22 damage from this one card.
Right.
So, it's,
and then be forced to discard all those cards.
And it's a card draw card for you. And, you know, this red is just, that's one of their biggest weaknesses is card draw. And
red and white, definitely.
Red's version of card draw is usually Wheel of Time or Wheel of Fortune type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Molten Psyche is a Wheel of Fortune type effect. So it covers you in a few areas. I would look at that card. I'm not guaranteeing it's awesome in the deck, but think about it.
But that's why I like Memory Jar for that same very reason. Yep. Five-drop artifact, tap it to sacrifice it. Each player sets aside his or her hand face down and draws 7 cards. At end of the turn, each player discards his or her hand and returns to his or her hand each card he or she set aside this way.
It's doing a lot of things the deck wants. It's an artifact. It's going to the graveyard. It's also making you draw cards and then discard them and putting more cards in the graveyard that you can use with Felden.
And the best thing is you do this on your turn.
Yep.
And everyone, pretty much, they draw 7 fresh cards that they can't really do anything with.
Hopefully, they can only play their instance, and they really can only play their instance that they have mana for right now.
Yeah. Hopefully they bin like crappy artifacts so you can Goblin Weld.
Yeah, why not?
Too, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and the fact that you can recur it. Red just needs card draw. This is a way to get a bunch of cards in your hand and then just dish them out again.
Another card I like, Dark Steel Forge.
Ah, yes.
It makes all of your artifacts indestructible.
Very important.
Super important, because then you can do crazy stuff like Nivinyl's Disc every turn.
Oh, yeah. Holy crap. That's insane.
Yeah, or Jockle Hops.
Don't say that word to me.
Jockle Hops.
Don't say that word to me. I don't want it. I don't want that word in my life.
Don't say that. That's just, if you go deep with Darksteel Forge and you can figure out some ways to tutor and find effects like that, make all your stuff indestructible, there's just powerful things you can do with that. And also just having your Wyrmcoil Engines be indestructible, like, you can still sacrifice them on your own, but then all the tokens are indestructible. Like, Darksteel Forge can get pretty crazy.
It can get pretty wonky and crazy. Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. I have a rules question. Mm-hmm. If you flicker something, when it comes back into the battlefield, does it have Summoning Sickness?
Yes.
Gotcha. So you have to have a Hastemaker.
But you're in red.
Yeah, if there's just some way to flicker Felden a bunch, that way you could just keep popping new stuff out. And
well, there's a lot of artifacts that untap creatures, or untap creatures with a tap ability, which he has, with an activated ability. So look those up. I think that's totally, they are artifacts also.
Oh,
so they're great in your deck. And being able to use Felden twice in a turn is
pretty
crazy.
Powerful, yeah.
I think Dual Caster Mage with Felden being used twice in a turn can be game winning. Because you can just, if one of your, how often is one other player casting a spell that's going to win them the game? But you go, well, instead of that, I'm going to cast that spell 3 times.
Yeah.
And now you not only do you not win, you just made me win. Yeah, I think Dual Caster Mage is super powerful. And
wait, does Felden grab spells though?
No, Felden grabs Dual Caster Mage.
Oh, right, that's
from your graveyard. Yeah, then you untap him, use him again in the same turn, cast another Dual Caster Mage, untap him, use him again, cast another Dual Caster Mage.
Yeah.
Copy something 2-3 times.
Jeez.
Somebody goes, "Oh, I'm going to take 2 extra turns. I'll take 6." Like that. That's the kind of thing.
Pretty sure you win.
Yeah, I think having a way to untap Felden a couple of times is really strong in this deck.
Yeah, and I like that.
Yeah, so that's a good start.
Get the Mana Rocks in there, get your Guild Lotuses and Thran
Dynamos. Get some card draw, Mind's Eye, stuff like that. Because also like Winds of Change, Wheel of Fortune type of effects for card draw are good too.
Yeah.
And this deck looks amazing.
Yeah. I think this deck has the, it starts off with some of the strongest cards and also has the ability to become the strongest through some
It's
tweaks.
Definitely the highest value, too, as far as what the cards themselves are worth. So, if that matters to you, that's a good reason to go after it, too.
Yeah,
I have a feeling we're going to see in this red deck a lot.
I want more Steel Hellkites.
Steel Hellkite. We didn't talk about it. That's another just crazy card. Look it up. It's
great. Yeah. You can, have you ever had an opponent that has like 4 enchantments that are all just busted?
They all cost 3.
Yeah.
They always all cost 3.
Or
have had that opponent. It was me.
Yeah.
Sometimes you play Steel Hellkite and you can literally just shut somebody out. You just destroy your stuff and then.
Or just like, what's the one thing I want to kill the most? Okay, those. I'm going to pay that much mana.
Yep. And a lot of times it's only 3 mana and then just boom.
Yep.
You got no board state.
Hey, at least Felden can bring it back too if it dies.
That's true.
Hee hee. Get some haste enablers in there too. Hammer, Perforos, and those kind of things.
Yeah. Oh, Felden gives haste to the thing he makes, though.
True.
So,
true.
Just like Kiki. But yeah, I think haste is important for a lot of reasons.
Anger.
Yeah. You want to be able to cast Felden later and use him right away, too. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Anger is a gimme, I'd say.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Those are the next two. We're going to go over Mono Blue, which is the last one on the next episode.
And then we're going to play all these decks as well next Tuesday and see how they do out of the box.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun. We're not going to change them like we've been talking about. We're actually just going to take them out of the box, get 5 people, and just play one game
Hopefully we can have some new perspectives on some cards that we either work the way that we thought they did or didn't, and we'll see. And we'll try and bring in Craig as well because he is our mono blue expert.
He has two mono blue EDH decks.
Let's not talk about those.
Two
either.
Among his like 40 EDH decks.
Yeah.
I call red.
Fine.
No, it's okay. I was just kidding, dude. You can have it.
I thought you would want blue of all the colors. I was just like, death glare. I was like, how dare you? You know, the thing is, I play red so much, I really wouldn't care if I played something else, but I call red.
Sorry, I had to do it. I had to do it. Your face was like, wait, what?
You caught me out. You caught me out. I had no idea that was coming. Good
check
play,
out the
Josh.
MMcast, Masters of Modern, That's our right. sister podcast. Talked about a lot. Glenn's not on there anymore, but...
Alex has found a new co-host in Benjamin Bateman, who's also on Top Decking, and he's been around for a long time. He's played a lot of Magic. He knows what's up as well.
Yeah, so check that out, and we will see you guys next time.
Take care.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.